Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 224, Smorgasbord, February 2023. Everybody, thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. I'm Roger, your host, and this is the podcast all about home cooking, getting in the kitchen, learning new things, having fun. Today, we have a smorgasbord episode, which of course means that I have a few different topics I want to cover on the show today, among which will be a review of a new book out by the Smithsonian called Smithsonian American Table. My friend Susie Miles from the Cooking and Convos podcast is going to stop by to share what she's been up to. I want to talk a little bit about egg prices and specifically aquafaba. So those are a few of the things we're going to get into today. Of course, before we get there, the housekeeping. First and foremost, the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/224. Again, head over to your favorite web browser, go to kitchencounterpodcast.com/224 to get the show notes. In the show notes, you'll find links to things I talk about for your easy listening, so you don't have to frantically take notes if you hear something that interests you. It'll all be in the show notes with links, so you can just head over there and get where you need to go. Also in the show notes are links to social media accounts where I lurk around. I'm not super active on social media, as some of you may know, but we do have a great Facebook group, the Kitchen Counter Coffee Break, which is a private group. So if you're a Facebook person, maybe head over there. You can get there from kitchencounterpodcast.com/group. That's the easiest way. Also, in that show notes are links over to the Southern Food and Beverage Museum down in New Orleans, Louisiana. Now, why would I be linking to that, you ask? Well, they are the home of the Nitty Grits podcast, which is a network of shows about food, drink, and culture, and the Kitchen Counter happens to be a member of the Nitty Grits podcast network. So I want to let you know about that. I also want to let you know that they're adding shows. They've got a couple new shows up there just in the last couple of months as well. So go down to southernfood.org, go to the link or the menu option for the Nitty Grits podcasts. Once you get there, and you can check everybody out, including yours truly. So southernfood.org. I know my friends down there in New Orleans, this week upcoming, they'll be celebrating Mardi Gras, at least as I record this. By the time I release it, it will probably be over and done with. But guaranteed to have a crazy time if you ever go to Mardi Gras in New Orleans. I was there once, probably 20 years ago, maybe a little bit longer. I don't even remember. It was probably the most interesting 3 or 4 days I've spent anywhere. I'll just say that. Anyway, that's another story for another podcast. So why don't we get into our topics for today's smorgasbord? Actually, one more quick thing before I get there. I mentioned I'm not on social media very much, but I was the other day. I was on Facebook and I got bit by a Facebook ad. I don't know if this ever happens to you. Most ads on Facebook, I just totally ignore as I'm scrolling through. I think it was on Facebook, I'm pretty sure. But I came across an ad from David Chang, celebrity mega chef of Momofuku fame over in New York. And he had an ad up there for his home instant noodles, his Momofuku noodle brand. And I don't know about you, but I love Asian noodles. No offense to the Italian flavored noodle people, but Asian noodles are one of my favorite things to eat. And I have to admit, I'm always on the hunt for really good Asian noodles. And I swear this is not an ad, by the way. You're probably already thinking this is, but it's not. So I saw this ad for the Momofuku instant noodles, and I thought, he made it look so good. I just had to do it. So probably once a year, maybe, I click through on a Facebook ad. And even more rare than that, I actually buy something off of that. But I did. I bought a pack, a 5-pack of this spicy soy noodles. And I also, because I'm an impulse buyer and it also looked good, I bought a jar of the Momofuku chili crunch condiment. Anyway, I got them last week. I gave a try. They're instant noodles, so you can boil them up in like 3 minutes, and they come with a sauce packet. So for lunch at home, if you're really craving like a salty, noodly thing, they're just like making a ramen almost, right? Or any sort of cup of noodle or packaged Asian noodle thing that you find in your grocery store that's in the instant noodle section. Anyway, long story short, they're really good. They're very delicious. The chili crunch is spicy. It's crunchy. And it's crunchy because I think there's like dried garlic and other bits of stuff added into it. So it's sort of like just your basic spicy chili oil condiment but with some crunchy elements in it. I made a bowl of the noodles. I fried an egg, threw that on top, a little bit of the soy chili, the crunchy chili, or chili crunch, I guess it is, on top. It was really, really good. But that's not the point of why I'm bringing all this up. Like I said, it's not an ad, but it is really good noodles. And it was only after the fact, after I got the noodles in the mail and I opened them up, that I realized that the noodles for Momofuku were manufactured by Asha, which is a Taiwanese company, and they are famed really for their instant noodles. And I've actually had Asha noodles several times before. They're one of my favorite noodles. I think they win competitions wherever they go. They're really, really high quality noodles. And even if you don't use the flavor packs that come with them, they're good to have on hand if you want to just use your own sauce to whip up a batch of noodles in a few minutes for lunchtime. But I got to thinking, I went back and looked at my receipt, what I spent for those Momofuku noodles for a pack of five, so five servings, individual packs, like a pack of ramen, right, was $13. So a little crazy, I think, for instant noodles. They were really good, but quite honestly, just the plain old Asha noodles are really good too. And you can get a five pack of those, I think, at Target and Walmart and World Market and probably online Amazon. You can get a five pack of those for like $6 or $7, maybe $8 tops. So really quite a lot less than the Momofuku noodles. And they're just as good. The sauce is just as good that comes with them. So I'm glad I tried these, but I don't think I would spend that much money again for a pack of noodles. I would just keep getting the Asha noodles. And I'll put links to those in the show notes. If you're a noodle person and you've been looking for a really good instant noodle that's obviously, it's not top ramen prices where you can get like four or five for a dollar when they're on sale, but they're really good quality. One of the things, as I understand it, that these noodles are a little bit different is that they're air dried and not fried before they're packaged. So like those little bricks of like top ramen that you get, I guess those noodles are fried, and that's they're fried into these little bricks and of course dried out and then put into the packaging. So these Asha noodles are not fried. They're air dried. So they're a little bit healthy that way. They're three ingredients. I think they're wheat, water, and salt. So they're very simple. They have a little bit of texture and chew to them. So they are adaptable to lots of different, whether it's a soup or just a saucy noodle plate. Just overall really, really good noodles. So I wanted to share that with you because I don't think I've ever talked about the Asha noodles before. Also, by the way, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but that little jar of chili crunch, I'm not even sure how big it was. Not big, like a small jelly jar, you know, those little jelly jars you get. It was also $13. Now, it was really good, but I don't think I could justify spending $13 on it again when there's a lot of, you know, chili oil. Chili condiments, a sambal or something like that. I have a bunch of that stuff, so I don't need anything else. And it all costs kind of a fraction of what that did. So that was my long, drawn-out story. Be careful what you buy on Facebook, although they were really good. The Momofuku stuff was excellent tasting, excellent quality. But so is the Asha stuff, and you can get that for not quite half the cost, but close. Moving on, I hope David Chang doesn't listen to this podcast because I'll feel bad if he does, even though he has no idea who I am, so why should I care? Let's get into the topics. Okay, first things first, I want to do a quick conversation about eggs because I've seen this come up quite a bit in the Facebook group, egg prices are up and down, up and down. I know in some places eggs are going for multiple dollars a dozen, and it probably depends on what type of eggs you get, right? If you get the nice cage-free, high in omega-3 eggs, you know, whatever they are, you're probably spending $5 or $6 a dozen. If you're getting the store brand, simple, large dozen eggs, I mean, you might still be spending a couple dollars a dozen on those. And it fluctuates. By the time you listen to this, it could be up or down. And anyway, I saw some chatter in the Facebook group about, geez, I'm not going to buy eggs anymore. And what would I, you know, just where are you going to cut down on your egg usage? And it occurred to me, and I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast before, but it occurred to me that I should talk briefly about aquafaba. If I've talked about it, it's probably been a while. And what aquafaba is, and that's aqua, A-Q-U-A, faba, F-A-B-A, it literally means bean water, as wonderful as that sounds, what an image, bean water. But in the way I'm going to talk about it today, it's the liquid that you have in a can of garbanzo beans. So you go buy a can of garbanzo beans or chickpeas at the store, you drain it out. Oftentimes we just take that liquid that gets drained out of the can, we toss it, drain off the beans, and we use the beans or the chickpeas for whatever we're going to use them for. But that liquid that the chickpeas cook in is aquafaba, and it is amazing. And I know the vegan folks who are listening and vegan bakers have known this for a long time, but aquafaba makes a really, really great egg substitute when it comes to baking. Actually, they make really good meringue too, although I doubt a lot of people are making meringue these days. But they make great egg substitutes when it comes to baking. And in your typical can of chickpeas, you might get, I don't know, 5 or so eggs worth of aquafaba out of there. So in a baking recipe, about 3 tablespoons of aquafaba equals 1 whole egg, 1 large egg. So keep that in mind. Now, the way it works is if you want to use aquafaba, you get your can of chickpeas. Now, you're not going to go buy a can of chickpeas probably just to get the aquafaba for baking. And maybe you are. But I'm thinking if you're using chickpeas for other things, this is a byproduct that you can save and use. You can actually even freeze the aquafaba. But it's full of these starches and proteins. So what you want to do before you open your can of chickpeas is you give the can a good shake to get everything mixed up in there. Because a lot of the times, if the chickpeas have been sitting on the shelf, the stuff will settle to the bottom. And you want to get it all mixed up in that liquid. So give the can a good shake for a few seconds. And then when you open it up, go ahead and, you know, drain through like a colander or a sieve or something your chickpeas, but capture all of the liquid that's in that can in a container. That's the aquafaba. That's the stuff that you can use to substitute for eggs. And it whips up just like eggs do, or egg whites even. So next time you're making a bread or a muffin or a cake or whatever, and it calls for an egg or two, go ahead and substitute aquafaba in for that. Whip it up to give it a little bit of foam and body, and then incorporate that into the recipe as you would the eggs. And you probably will not even be able to tell that there aren't eggs in your recipe. So if you're worried about egg prices and baking, think of aquafaba. It's a really cool alternative. I have used it. I've actually made meringue cookies with aquafaba before. And honestly, with the sugar and the vanilla, I just made vanilla ones. There's no way you would know that it was not made with egg whites. I won't get into super deep detail on using aquafaba. I think you get the idea. So don't throw away the chickpea cooking liquid. That stuff is really, really valuable. It can save in the fridge, like in an airtight container, say for a week. If you're not going to use it that fast, you can freeze it. And the way you probably want to do it is in ice cube trays. You can freeze in about 1 tablespoon sizes or 2 tablespoon sizes. Well, if you're going to use 3 tablespoons for an egg, either freeze them in 3 tablespoon sizes or 1 tablespoon size, depending on the size of your ice cube tray. But then you can just go ahead and thaw it out before you go to bake it. You can even defrost it in the microwave to melt it. And defrost it before you use it in your baking. And then that way it'll last, you know, a year or whatever. And then you've got egg replacer aquafaba whenever you need it. Now, it's not going to replace egg in like a frittata or a quiche recipe. It's just not like an egg in that way, but where you're putting it into a baked good or making meringue, it's absolutely a great replacer. America's Test Kitchen has a great webpage on using aquafaba. And they also talk about cream of tartar, which just like if you're making a meringue, a little bit of cream of tartar in your aquafaba as you're whipping it will help it maintain its shape and stay puffy and creamy longer without foamy, without, you know, turning to water and just evaporating away, or not evaporating, but melting away, I guess, or turning from foam to liquid again. So I'll put the link to that in the show notes. I think you might get a kick out of it. Use it. If you do, I'd love to hear how it goes. Shoot me an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com. So go see if you have any chickpeas in the pantry and get yourself some aquafaba. I want to talk for a moment about this new book I got a hold of that just came out this year, February 2023, to be exact. It is Smithsonian American Table, The Foods, People, and Innovations That Feed Us. This is by Lisa Kingsley in collaboration with the Smithsonian Institution. Now, I got a hold of this from the publisher Harvest. And I've been looking at this, and I really like this book. Now, a lot of you, if you've listened to the show, you know I love food, obviously. I love cookbooks, obviously. But I also love history and the cultural aspects of food and cooking. And this is why I'm really getting into this book. I wasn't sure what to expect when I first got it. In fact, I thought maybe it was going to be sort of like an encyclopedic look at different foods and recipes from around the country. And there was a book that came out a few years ago like that. It was America, the Cookbook, Gabriel Langholtz. I don't know. I think I talked about it on the show. That's more of an encyclopedic, every 50 states and the territories, and it's got multiple recipes for every state in there. Smithsonian American Table is different. It's not an encyclopedia of recipes. I was pleased, actually, to find that out when I got a hold of the book and started looking through it. It does have some recipes, but it's not arranged state by state per se. It's really arranged as sort of from indigenous culture to pre-Columbian civilization all the way up to modern times. It takes big chunks of history all along the way, and it breaks the book up into these sections. And so you will find interesting historical surveys of different peoples, places, and times, different trends and fads, different ingredients, and definitely peppered throughout there are recipes. So to give you an example, only the first part of this book, and this is about 290 some odd pages, and it's kind of a coffee table book. It looks like the size of a big hardback cookbook, but it's really more of a coffee table book, I would say, than a cookbook. Anyway, the first section of this book, the first chapter, is about place and is about geography. And it does talk about indigenous cultures, and it does call out different regions of the United States and the different foods that are found there. For example, in the Northwest, which is where I live in the state of Oregon, it does have blurbs for every state that happen to be in the Northwest. But for example, for Washington State, it talks about gooey duck, which is a giant bivalve, like a giant mussel, if you will. And it gives a few paragraphs about it, but alas, no recipes. However, California does get chicharron pupusas, and Oregon does get marionberry pie, which I can attest is an iconic dish here in Oregon. So not every locale has a recipe. But how this book shines is as you go through it, its sweeping look at the history, culture, and society of food in America, the American Table, as it's titled. So you'll have essays and entries on different cultural groups. I already mentioned indigenous peoples, but it also has, of course, the Black African cultural experience in the United States, Jewish, Asian American, along, of course, with other European settlers. It talks in another section about food fads and trends. It's almost every two pages is a new item. So it doesn't go really deep, but it's really fun to read. It's kind of like a book of facts that I used to love when I was a kid. So in food fads or in trends, Of course, it talks about coffee and tea. It talks about street food and food carts. It talks about the rise of the community cookbook, backyard cookouts. I'm just thumbing through it now. All sorts of lunch pails, things like that. It's really pretty cool in the breadth of subject matter that it tries to tackle. The last couple of chapters are devoted to more of the individuals who have made an impact on the American table, innovators and creators, and then it ends up with tastemakers, and that's a little bit more of a modern glimpse. You have the Julia Childs, the James Beards, the Leah Chases, those sorts of folks, and with essays and short biographies of each. The subject matter, of course, is amazing, but probably the best part about it is it is chock full of images, photographs, drawings, illustrations from the Smithsonian collection. So it's full of just tons of really cool stuff. Like when you have the community cookbook section, it just shows all sorts of cool books from that era in time, you know, the church potluck cookbook type thing. Vintage ads for food. When you go down to like mass immigration from Europe, you've got some really amazing photos of immigrants and how they connect to food. Immigrants with food carts, like hot dog carts and pretzel carts and things like that. There's even, I'm just flipping through it, you can even learn about Chef Boyardee. Yeah, he was a real person. So Smithsonian American Table, very cool book, highly recommended for those of you who are interested in food history, food culture, and food ways in the United States. It's not going to go super deep on any particular cuisine or person or ingredient or anything like that, but it is an excellent broad survey of the varied fabric that makes up the American food way. So it'll be right up the alley of any food and history lover you have in your household. Again, Smithsonian American Table by Lisa Kingsley in collaboration with the Smithsonian Institution. I'm going to give a copy of it away, I think. I like it so much. I'm going to get an extra copy and give it away. You can go over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway to enter there. Just follow the instructions on the screen. At the very least, you'll need to provide your email address. So if I do draw your name randomly, I'll know how to get a hold of you. I don't use those emails to pester you about anything else but the contest. So kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway if you want to try to get a copy of Smithsonian American Table for free. Otherwise, I will put links to where you can purchase it online at the show notes over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/224. And I'll tell you what, we'll leave the giveaway open until March 15th, 2023. So head over to the giveaway page before March 15th to enter. And then on March 16th or so, I'll draw a name and see who gets that free copy of Smithsonian American Table. So thanks to Harvest Publishing and Jessica Kazi over there for letting me take a look at this book. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you. Okay, let's take a break. I want to invite Susie Miles from the Cooking and Convos podcast to the show. I was on Susie's show last year, one of her earliest episodes. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. But I, what I want to do, I want to bring Susie on so she can tell you a little bit about her podcast, which of course will be definitely of interest to the folks listening to this podcast. But in future Smorgasbord episodes, I also want to start bringing in some other independent podcasters to let them tell us who they are, what their show is about. And, you know, I love to support independent podcasters. So if any of you listening find interest in not only what Susie has to say, but in the future independents that come on the show to talk about their podcasts, please do me a favor, do them a favor, head over and check out their show and give them a shot. So Susie Miles, the Cooking and Convos podcast, I was on her show early on in her episodes last year. I'll put the link to that in the show notes. Had a great conversation with Susie. I'll tell you why I really like her show and why I think it's going to be of interest to you. She has a very easy manner about herself. She is going to start doing more cooking and food episodes, but she invites folks onto her show and just has conversations about food and cooking. And it's very laid back, very approachable. and quite enjoyable. I think you'll get some value out of it if you go check out her show. So without further ado, here is Susie Miles from the Cooking and Convos podcast. Susie, thanks for stopping by. Glad you're here. How are you doing?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great. This is a real pleasure, Roger.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I wanted to have you on the show. I thought we could talk for a few minutes because you have a podcast, Cooking and Convos, and I'm going to ask you about that in a second, and we'll talk about it. But I wanted to introduce you to my audience and let them learn a little bit more about you and your show, how to find you. And I was actually on your show last year, one of your earlier episodes. So thank you for having me on your show.
Sure thing.
Yeah, but I thought it'd be fun to have you on and, get people a little more exposure to you and what you're doing, because I think your show is great. I was just listening to an episode where you had another guest on, and you have great sound quality. You're very conversational in your show, and I do think there's a lot of value in what you're all talking about. So that's what I want to do.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that feedback.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me, let's start just from the beginning. Who are you? Whatever you want to share. And then if you just want to segue into telling us a little bit about what your podcast is about.
Sure. My name is Susie Miles. I live in Northern Virginia, which is just a little bit outside of Washington, D.C. I'm married. I have two children who are in their early 20s. And I recently, about a year ago, left my full-time job to start my podcast called Cooking and Convos. And it's a podcast that focuses on cooking good, delicious food while also not spending a ton of time in the kitchen. No more than 30 minutes is what I usually say. And what I try to do is break that 30 minutes up by prepping a little bit in the morning for a few minutes. And then later in the day, you won't have the stress of having to create all of it from scratch. I'm not into complicated recipes. I personally don't feel it's necessary. I think you can create yummy, yummy food with 6 ingredients or less. And I just want to help people through my podcast. I want to create more ease in their cooking life by suggesting simple recipes and also offering kitchen tips to them as well.
Now, you do that, and you do that very well, but you also have guests on. And what I love about when you have guests on is you tend to interweave everything you just said into your conversations with guests. So the guests, of course, have some area of expertise or focus, but you have a really nice way of just chatting kitchen and cooking with them.
Oh, thank you. I really do appreciate that. It's nice to get feedback.
Yeah, it really does remind me of just sort of sitting around and chit-chatting with a friend, about whatever the cooking du jour topic happens to be. So good job on that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I try to mix the show in with some solo episodes from myself, which are typically under about 10 minutes. I think people are really busy these days. They don't want to spend a ton of time listening to podcasts, or they want to listen to so many podcasts. There's so many good ones out there. My interviews tend to be a little bit longer, but I enjoy conversation. I always have. I love even deep conversation, and I want the podcast to be as if you're talking with someone in your kitchen. So I'm glad that you feel it. It has a relaxed tone.
Oh, it definitely does. And that's the great thing about the podcast medium is you can have those sorts of conversations. There's no conceived or predefined expectations, only what you set with your audience, which I think is what's really kind of cool about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's not like you're on a radio show and you have to be exactly 19 minutes and...
Oh, exactly.
These are your topics. And so... So you're taking advantage of the medium very well.
Well, I love the freedom. I love the freedom that podcasts give. You can just really say what you need to say. And if you want 20 minutes to say it, you have it. I love it. It's not like television where you have a hard out. That's what my experience is
right
in television production. And it was just always so stressful. Producing shows has to be, 56 minutes or whatever the length had to be. So I'm really enjoying the freedom of podcasting.
So when you're not... working on your show, what are you cooking? What are you cooking these days? What are you really getting into?
Well, I like to cook a variety of different food. I'm kind of planning out my Sunday meal. I tend to think of my Sunday meal on Fridays. I'm going to make a very yummy, easy to make beet sauce. I know that sounds kind of yucky tasting, but you take the beets, you peel them, and you roast them with garlic, rosemary, and onion, and some olive oil. You roast it. Now, Sundays, I take more time, obviously, sure, in cooking. But that beet sauce can last me for a couple of nights worth of meals. So I'll take that beet sauce and I'll pour it over pasta. And I like to put shrimp on top. And I just find it very zesty, tasty, and satisfying. And I feel that that simple recipe is restaurant worthy. It is so tasty with a little bit of Parmesan cheese and a little bit of cream. It's very lovely. And it's kind of pretty too, a pink hue to it.
Yeah, and simple, and using beets, yes. Which isn't, I think a lot of people probably, unless you like beets, you're probably not using any beets in your cooking. So I think that's a great intro, maybe, is to put it into a sauce form and enjoy it that way.
Yes, exactly. Because you kind of hide it, you know, you hide the notion of, oh my goodness, they're beets.
Yeah, which, you know, beets get a bad rap. I feel bad
they
for
do.
Beets. They're not. It's like parsnips. Parsnips are great,
yes. You
know.
Are they?
Yeah,
oh, they're great. Good.
You know, it's like one of those vegetables that just sound gross or something. It's like, no, they're delicious. If you just give them a chance.
Exactly.
So, are you doing a couple shows a month now? Is that kind of your cadence?
I am. I try to get one out near the 15th of the month and then near the end of the month. Although I'm not putting pressure on myself sometimes. Like I just uploaded an episode yesterday and I'll probably upload an episode maybe the top of next month. So I'm not being too rigid, but I do like the cadence of every couple of weeks. I think that I would like to do weekly, but I'm not there yet.
Yeah, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, exactly.
There may have been a couple times in my life when I tried to switch to weekly, and it's just like, literally, there's no free time for anything else. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What's coming up on your show? Anything, any sneak peeks or any ideas or topics that you're going to be tackling? I know in your last episode, I think it was your last episode, you said you were going to do an episode on pantry items.
Yes, I think that is so important. I'm going to actually record that next week. That'll probably come out the end of March. But I think it's important for people to know the basics that they need or that they maybe should have based on what they like to eat. Because I think a lot of people do get stressed out at the end of the day if they're figuring out what to make and they're like, oh, I don't have cinnamon or oh, I don't have garlic powder. Garlic powder is my best friend. I hate to admit it, but it is. I mean, garlic powder really enhances a lot of meals.
I like garlic powder. There's nothing wrong with garlic powder.
So I would like to do an episode on just that, I think, to help. I don't know. I think people need to fill their cabinets with things they can use that they can use often in their cooking. I thought about over in the middle of the night one night recently, I sometimes, again, I don't like to admit it, but I buy rotisserie chicken sometimes on a Sunday and I'll make chicken salad for the week or I'll make a chicken pot pie. So I want to do an episode on 5 or 6 things you can easily make with a rotisserie chicken. And that saves a ton of time from actually having to bake the chicken. So I'm going to do an episode on that. I have someone coming up. It's not cooking related, but it's home related. And she runs the podcast, What's Up With Your Stuff? And she talks all about the clutter in your homes, the clutter in your kitchen. And so that'll be coming down the pike as well.
I will have to listen to that episode because this summer we have this community garage sale that, you know, or, you know, several blocks of it's.
Oh, fun.
You can join it and you put stuff out. It's your own, you know, driveway or garage or whatever, but it's like a community thing. So you get all this traffic and stuff. And this year I'm like, I'm going to go through all my kitchen stuff and cooking stuff. Oh my gosh, it was so much stuff that I was like, I bought and used once, like a specially shaped cake pan or you know, I hate to admit it, but sometimes gifts, like little knick-knacky kitchen, which are cool, but it's like, I don't need like 3 avocado peelers, right? So,
right.
You know, get rid of some of those. So, I probably could have been more, less discerning too. I probably could have gotten a lot of more stuff out of here, but you know.
Well, you start slowly.
You start slowly. And I like my kitchen stuff, even if I don't use it.
My wife probably
rolls her eyes, but can I say some of that stuff I've only used once. I don't want to get rid of because I might use it once again.
Exactly.
So, I was going to say the rotisserie chicken thing.
Yes.
When you're done with it, and you know this, but you can make stock from what's left. So
that's true.
So clean it off, and then you can make yourself a little batch of stock as well from what's left over that rotisserie chicken.
I will add that into the show.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily easy and fast, but
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
you've got it. Why not?
Exactly.
So where can we find your podcast? And you on, if you have social media or a website or anything like that, why don't you give that all to us?
Sure. Well, you can reach me on Instagram at Cookie and Convos Podcast. I also have another Instagram account at SusieMiles88. That's more personal, but my podcast is Cookie and Convos Podcast. My podcast is on Apple, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. And this year I'll start reaching out to other platforms as well. But those are the three areas or platforms where you can find me.
Yeah, that should cover 90% of most people, I would think. Very good. Cooking and Convos, Susie Miles. Great show. You should definitely go check it out. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to swing over here and let everybody here know about you and your show. And we'll send some folks over to check it out if they haven't already.
Thank you so much, Roger. Again, loved being here.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that short chat with Susie Miles of the Cooking and Convos podcast. If you want to check out her show, I will put the links to it in the show notes. But otherwise, just head over to Apple Podcasts and look for Cooking and Convos and you'll find it, or Spotify, you'll find it really easy. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for one more episode of the Kitchen Counter podcast. Thank you so much for taking time to listen in. Don't forget the show notes for this episode will be over at kitchencounterpodcast.com/224. Also, don't forget to head over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/giveaway to enter the drawing for a copy of Smithsonian American Table. Thanks again to Harvest and Jessica Causey over there for hooking me up with a copy of the book to check out. Like I said, I like it so much, I'm going to keep this copy, but I'm going to grab another one and give it away to a lucky listener. I'll also put the links in the show notes if you want to pick yourself up a copy. Otherwise, Southern Food and Beverage Museum, the Nitty Grits podcast down at southernfood.org. My gosh, all sorts of stuff you need to be checking out that'll keep you busy, hopefully, until I can get another episode of the Kitchen Counter podcast out. All right, everybody, thanks again for listening. I hope your 2023 is going strong now that we're into February. I hope you're getting in the kitchen, having some fun, cooking some good food, learning some new things, and pushing yourselves. That's what it's all about. All right, until next time, I'm Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Happy cooking.